Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And if you weren't terrified enough, listen to this. What happens to the attached person at the time of death? We're going to start with text 19. I'll just read a bit. Hold on to your socks. Yama du tau tada prap tau arrive. At death, he sees the messengers of the Lord of Death come before him, their eyes full of wrath. And in great fear, he passes stool and urine. Purport. There are two kinds of transmigration of a living entity after passing away from the present body. One kind of transmigration is to go to the controller of sinful activities, who is known as Yamaraj. And the other is to go to the higher planets, up to Vaikuntha. Here, Lord Kapila describes how persons engaged in activities of sense gratification to maintain a family are treated by the messengers of Yamaraj. Pretty scary. At the time of death, the Yamadutas become the custodians of those persons who have strongly gratified their senses. They take charge of the dying man and take him to the planet where Yamaraj resides. The conditions there are described in the following verses. Text 20. As a criminal is arrested for punishment by the constables of the state, a person engaged in criminal sense gratification is similarly arrested by the Yamadutas, who bind him by the neck with strong rope and cover his subtle body so that he may undergo severe punishment. Purport. Every living entity is covered by a subtle and gross body. The subtle body is the covering of mind and ego and intelligence and consciousness. That's contaminated consciousness. It is said in the scriptures that the constables of Yamaraj cover the subtle body of the culprit and take him to the abode of Yamaraj to be punished in a way that he is able to tolerate. He does not die from this punishment. Because if he died, then who would suffer the punishment? It is not the business of the constables of Yamaraj to put one to death. In fact, it is not possible to kill a living entity because, factually, he is eternal. Semicolon. He simply has to suffer the consequences of activities of sense gratification. Paragraph. The process of punishment is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Formerly, the king's men would take a criminal in a boat in the middle of the river. They would dunk him by grasping a bunch of his hair and thrusting him completely underwater. And when he was almost suffocated, the king's constables would take him out of the water, allow him to breathe for some time, and then it would again dunk him in the water to suffocate. This sort of punishment is inflicted upon the forgotten soul by Yamaraj, as will be described in the following verses. Text 21. I'm glad we didn't discuss this yesterday. We discussed the Madhurya Kadambini and said. Anyway, text 21. While carried by the constables of Yamaraj, he is overwhelmed and trembles in their hands. While passing on the road, he is bitten by dogs and he can remember the sinful activities of his life, he is thus terribly distressed. Purport. It appears from this verse that while passing from this planet to the planet of Yamaraj, the culprit arrested by Yamaraj's constables meets many dogs which bark. Just remind him of his criminal activities of sense gratification. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that one becomes almost blind and is bereft of all sense when he is infuriated by the desire for sense gratification. He forgets everything. Kamais taishta hrita gyana. One is bereft of all intelligence when he is too attracted by sense gratification. And he forgets that he has to suffer the consequences also. Here, the chance for recounting his activities of sense gratification is given by the dogs engaged by Yamaraj. While we live in a gross body, such activities of sense gratification are encouraged even by modern government regulations. In every state all over the world, such activities are encouraged by the government in the form of birth control. Women are supplied pills, and they are allowed to go to a clinical laboratory to get assistance for abortions. This is going on as a result of sense gratification. Actually, sex life is meant for beginning a good child, but because people have no control over the senses, and there is no institution to train them to control the senses, the poor fellows fall victim to criminal offenses of sense gratification, and they are punished after death, as described in these pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. It goes on. Text 22. Under the scorching sun, the criminal has to pass through roads of hot sand. Most people don't like reading this section of the Bhagavatam. If we were to supply this to Christian Bible thumpers, they would probably really like it. So, with full sides, and he is whipped on the back by the constables because of his inability to walk, and he is afflicted by hunger and thirst, but unfortunately, there's no drinking water, no shelter, and no place to rest on the road. While passing on that road to the abode of Yamaraj, he falls down in fatigue, sometimes becomes unconscious, but when he is forced to rise again, in this way, he is very quickly brought to the presence of Yamaraj. Thus, he has to pass 99,000 yojanas, and one yojana equals 8 miles, within 2 or 3 moments. How is that possible? And then he is at once engaged in the torturous punishment which he is destined to suffer. Purport. One yojana is calculated to be 8 miles. And he has to pass along a road which is therefore as much as 792,000 miles. Like, what's that? What's the circumference of the earth? It's more than multiple times the circumference of the earth. In 2 or 3 seconds. The subtle body is covered by the constables. Covered. The subtle body is covered by the constables so that the living entity can pass such a long distance quickly and at the same time tolerate the suffering. This covering, although material, is of such fine elements that material scientists cannot discover what the coverings are made of. To pass 792,000 miles within a few moments seems wonderful to the modern space travelers. They have so far traveled at the speed of 18,000 per hour. But here we see that a criminal passes 792,000 miles within a few seconds only. Although the process is not spiritual, but material. Wow, it's really heavy. Should I keep going? And, text 25, he is placed in the midst of burning pieces of wood, and his limbs are set on fire. In some cases, he is made to eat his own flesh or have it eaten by others. Purport. From this verse through the next three verses, the description of punishment will be narrated. The first description is that the criminal has to eat his own flesh burning with fire, or allows others like himself who are present there to eat it. In the last great war, people in concentration camps sometimes ate their own stool. So there's no wonder that the Yama Sadhana, the abode of Yamaraj, one who has a very enjoyable life eating others' flesh, has to eat his own flesh. Wow. Text 26. His entrails are pulled out by the hounds and vultures of hell, even though he is still alive to see it. And he is subjected to torment by serpents, scorpions, gnats, and other creatures that bite him. Not over yet. Text 27. Next, his limbs are lopped off and torn asunder by elephants. He is hurled down from hilltops, and he is also held captive, either in water or in a cave. Text 28. This is the end of the Shinnikon after that. Men and women whose lives were built upon indulgence in illicit sex life were put into many kinds of miserable conditions in the hells known as Tamishra, Anta Tamishra, and Rorava. Purport. Materialistic life is based on sex life. The existence of all the materialistic people who are undergoing severe tribulation in the struggle for existence is based on sex. Therefore, in Vedic civilization, sex life is allowed only in a restricted way. It is for the married couple and only for begetting children. But when sex life is indulged in for sense gratification illegally or illicitly, or illegally and illicitly, both the man and the woman await severe punishment in this world or after death. In this world also, they are punished by virulent diseases like syphilis and gonorrhea, and in the next life, as we see in this passage of the Bhagavatam, they are put into difficult, different kinds of hellish conditions to suffer. In Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, illicit sex life is also very much condemned, and it is said that when it produces children by illicit sex life is sent to hell. It is confirmed here in the Bhagavatam that such offenders are put into hellish conditions of life like Tamishra, Anta Tamishra, and Rorava. Well, that's the end of the description. Next is Lord Kapila kind of changes the subject a little bit. He steps back from the details of that suffering and starts instructing Devahuti. Better watch out. Well, as I said, the section is not simply for scare tactic, but the reality is reality, or the nature of the consequences of illegal activity is punishment can be very severe. This is Canto 3. The topic is revisited in Canto 5 with the structure of the universe and, you know, more details, more like Tamishra, Andatamishra, Rorava, those planes of material existence in the lower regions. There's more detail, and it is disturbing that living entities have to undergo that kind of tribulation. So much so that Maharaj Parikshit, hearing this description, although he's going to die, he's very concerned about the welfare of those that are going to have to undergo those hellish conditions. And so he inquires into what can be done to prevent people from having to undergo the suffering of those hellish conditions. So that's, you know, once they've already done those things, what's the antidote? And what we're getting here in Canto 3 is to prevent people from such, you know, it's the prevention rather than the cure. There's this saying, the ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Heard that phrase before? A stitch in time saves nine, all these little cliches. So better that people understand there's consequences for a life of sense gratification without any regard for the Supreme. So better to go to the side of the Supreme. If that's all there was in the Bhagavatam, it wouldn't be attractive to all classes of men. It would be compelling to persons who are in tamaguna. Persons in tamaguna, they can't understand anything but a stick. If you do like this, you're going to get smacked. So don't do like this, do like that. For those in the mode of goodness, the stick isn't necessary. But at the same time, a transcendentalist, the Kapila Deva is speaking to Devahuti. She's not a tamagun person. She's a transcendentalist. She's a pure devotee. So what does a pure devotee understand or feel? Doesn't feel fear. Oh, I better sit straight because otherwise I'm going to get smacked. Rather, it's compassion and very explicitly detachment. In the first canto, chapter 7, the early verses, something like 5 through 9, these are the verses where the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam is presented. Specifically, it's the realization of Vyasa under the instruction of Narada. Then the realization is the basis of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, because that was his instruction. Enter into a trance of meditation upon the absolute truth, the Supreme Person, and that which you realize should be the subject matter of your literature that you compose. So he followed Narada's instructions. He had this vision, and one of the visions is what's described here. Sammohita jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi. Although transcendental, the living entity thinks himself a product of the three modes of nature, and therefore suffers and becomes bewildered and suffers. So all this suffering that we just described, it's illusory suffering. Illusory suffering in the sense that, well, literally, it's the subtle body. When it's not the gross body that's being eaten and entrails being pulled out and, you know, so many dogs biting and gnats biting and serpents biting and it's subtle. It's a subtle, so with subtle ropes, the Yamadutas come, you know, the people, supposing somebody's dying, the people in the room don't see the Yamadutas come. But the Yamadutas come, it's subtle. And they have subtle ropes, and they take the subtle body and pull the subtle body from the gross body and transport that subtle body to the abode of Yamaraj. And we heard the number several times, 792,000 in a couple of seconds. That's subtle travel. Subtle travel like Prabhupada gives this example. It's the speed of the mind. The mind is subtle, subtle body. So one can be, he would say, I'm sitting here in New York and I can think of Delhi or Calcutta. And immediately the mind is there. That's how fast the mind travels. So mind travel is really fast. And this is subtle. These events are subtle. It's like what we experience in a dream. Supposing there's something in a dream. We've all had dreams. So what you experience in a dream is going on subtly, but as far as, you know, this external reality, it's but a dream. Prabhupada gives the example. You just sitting on a throne, you become king. Oh, how nice. And then into the palace comes a tiger. Oh, now I'm afraid. And you scream and you wake up because you screamed. And there's no tiger. There's no throne. It's just a dream. But it's something that one experiences enough that one screams so loudly you wake up and perspire and tremble and palpitate and the heart's going, but there's no tiger. There's no throne. So it's something, it's illusion. And that illusion in a dream is similar to the illusion of being taken by the Yamadutas to the court of Yamaraj and all these different sufferings. And that is as illusory as this, Prabhupada would explain. That's a night dream, where you might dream at night, sitting on a throne, here comes a tiger. And then there's the daydream, meaning as far as the activities at night, this is but a dream. And to the activities of this, that is but a dream. They're both but a dream. They're not, in an absolute sense, they're not real. But subjectively, so the issue is that consciousness has abandoned the real self and the soul's real relationship with Krishna. And then, as a result, Maya covers, is described in this little purport, that, you know, there's a covering. We read it, or you heard about it, in relation to Madhurya Kandamani, these different potencies of the Supreme Lord, Avranatmaka and Prakshipatmaka Shakti, and then the Asmita and Avidya and all these things. You know, Maya's very powerful. We accept that which is not our real self to be a real self, and then subjectively we experience events and emotions connected to those events, although it's not who we really are. So one who's in that space or paradigm where they accept that which they are not to be who they are, so they're in illusion, and they ignore the existence of God, then sense gratification without restriction. Well, although it's but a dream, then there's consequences for that sense gratification without restriction. And we're hearing Kapiladeva as is the authority that's giving us this understanding. So it's not simply a scare tactic. It's what happens of unrestricted, for those who live their lives with unrestricted sense gratification. So, you know, the previous section is specifically about fruitive activities and the attachment to the sense of happiness through fruitive activities. It has its consequences. And Prabhupada would say, this they do not know. If people actually knew, would they do all these things? Of course, some people, they're impulsive criminals. Even they get punished. Even they get apprehended. They know it's going to happen. They get apprehended. They're put into jail. And then when they're released, they go and do it again. Because it's compulsive. The modes of nature are so strong. It compels them to do these things again and again. Punash charvata charvanana. The knowledge doesn't awaken. So in Jiva Goswami's, you know, please pardon me for, again, Tattva Sandarbha, but Jiva Goswami discusses this in Tattva Sandarbha in analyzing Vyasadeva's realization and, you know, the function of Maya. And just, it's detail, but it's nice. Maya feels bad. And therefore, she's behind. She's she's under his control, under the Lord's control, and standing behind him because she's ashamed. She's not exactly ashamed doing service. She's bad because that the Lord doesn't want the living entities to undergo tribulation. But the why they undergo tribulation is not, you know, it's Maya's fault. But she's not feeling guilty. It's my fault they're undergoing tribulation. She knows that the Lord, it's their choice, their misuse of free will, and therefore she has her service to keep, put them in these troubling conditions, although they're illusory. Material happiness and material distress are both illusory. It's not real happiness, it's not real distress. Real distress is forgetting Krishna. Real happiness is remembering Krishna and being in our relationship with him. It's really fundamental. So Maya feels bad. And the Lord doesn't feel bad towards Maya. He feels bad that the living entities have to undergo this tribulation because of the misuse of free will. So therefore, Jiva Goswami explains, the purpose of these sufferings, and for our sake, the purpose of hearing about these sufferings, either way, knowing that it can happen, it does happen, or even worse, undergoing these tribulations, because it happens. Hell exists, and people undergoing these tribulations exists. It's impetus for some to take, don't do that, take to devotional service, you know, the stick. So in either case, if it's done out of love or out of fear, take up devotional service. It's something like the second canto verse, Akama, Sarvakama Va Moksha Kama Udaradi, that nice verse. Sarva kama, serve Krishna. Moksha kama, serve akama, serve Krishna. Preferably serve Krishna out of love, not out of fear. But if that fear is the position that one begins to serve from, at least there's the opportunity, one, to not have to undergo that suffering, and another is possibility. To come to the position of love just by contact with Krishna. Because after all, Krishna is all attractive. Now, supposing you were God. You're the creator, and you can design things however you like. You might think, well, if I had my opportunity, I wouldn't do it like that. I wouldn't have people suffer these kinds of things, like unthinkable. I would never do that. Because we have our sense of, you know, righteousness and justice and fairness and kindness and compassion. We would never do that. So why does God do that? Again, it's this yaya samohito jiva. It's there. As impetus to correct the misuse of free will spirit for those who are so inclined to misuse their free will. There's consequences for misuse of free will. So better about how you exercise free will. Instead of, you know, debating about whether I should steal or not steal. If you're very clear what the consequences are, it makes it a little bit easier if there's a tendency to steal or a tendency for sense gratification that's unrestricted. If you don't know the consequences, maybe I can get away with it. In moderation. In moderation. Prabhupada didn't like that in moderation idea. Moderation. In moderation leads to beyond moderation. Just the nature of the modes and how they work. You take a nice big bucket of white paint. Pure white paint. Take a little eyedropper and squirt some blue and squirt some red and stir. What happens? No longer white. It's off-white. But the nature of moderation is there's consequences to the passion and to the ignorance, and it leads to more passion and more ignorance. And so the nice bucket of white paint gets darker and darker just over time. It just works that way. It's how the ages of mankind... So Satya Yuga, it's like a whirlpool. At the outer edges of a whirlpool, the water moves slowly. But then as you move towards the center, it moves more quickly, and down very quickly. That's how the ages work. So it's primarily the mode of goodness. Some passions of ignorance. There's some demons. Some demoniac influence, mode of ignorance, mode of passion, influence. Little. And then it happens again and again. So what happens at the end of Kali Yuga? Every one of those 1,000 yuga cycles every day of Brahma, Kalki Avatar comes and annihilates everybody. Sinful activities and reaction to the sinful activities obliterated, just killing everybody wholesale, and then Satya Yuga, because it has to go right back up again. So there are some personalities that are in seclusion, just like it describes in the 12th canto Bhagavatam, the symptoms of, so saintly personalities, they're, after Kalki Avatar finishes, they come out of their seclusion and they start Satya Yuga. And it's way up there again. But it's the nature, of moderation, in moderation, it's going to lead to degradation. Further. Just how it works. I mean, there's a brake pedal, moderation. But it leads to less use of the brake pedal, you know, invariably. And, you know, world events show it. It starts with something and it leads to the more something. It leads to destruction. And after destruction, what? You know, there's restoration and some peaceful period, and then again some passion and some ignorance, and it just keeps happening over and over again. And as the ages progress, it just accelerates. And then Kalki comes. And so those who are aspiring transcendentalists need to know moderation is, you know, we live under the codes of Dharma. Just like this principle of the number one attraction in the material world in all species of life, not just in human society, is male-female attraction. It's what makes the world go round. It's what how species reproduce, and that the whole machine, once it's started, keeps going. So it's pervasive. So in human society, there's regulation. And not deviation from that regulation in moderation. It's not. So for practicing devotees, it's easy to understand. For those that aren't practicing devotees or don't know what the regulations are, and or know what the regulations are and don't follow them, there's consequences. And it's not like, you know, somebody with a strict disciplinarian spirit is standing there with a stick in his hand and waiting for you to step out of line and smack. It's not like that. It's not God is mean. It's just the nature of the place to keep us sober and infidelity. Better, it's to induce persons to come to the position of relationship with the Supreme in love. But remember that, you know, the question that Devahuti asked in 29, is there devotional service which is pure mixed with the modes? Yes. And it's, you know, the separatist, separate interest, fruit of activities, and how we see the products of what we do and how they're to be utilized. It's, you know, that's the modes of nature's influence. And activities in the modes of nature. So there's, you know, guna and karma. Put the two together and you have material existence. And this is what the downside looks like. So there's different planetary systems depending upon how lies are for this one, and this one. And then there's transcendence, just complete harmony with the will of the Supreme. Let thy will be mine. Love of God. And then punar janma na vidyate. That's the advocacy of Bhagavad Gita. That's the advocacy of Lord Kapila. And, you know, and the big picture is some people don't do that. It's not, they're not interested in transcendence, they're interested in sense gratification for which there's consequences. And so then the living entity is rotating. I'm tempted to explore a little bit what is Maya? Does it exist? Or is Maya simply false, as the Mayavadis say? Simply false. And the answer is no. It's not simply false. It's an exhibition of one of the lesser, separated material energies acting upon the living entity. So it's not absolutely false or absolutely doesn't exist. Like, you know, this description is hellish. It's a realm. It's not false. It's now you see it, now you don't. Like, there's the period of cosmic manifestation and cosmic annihilation. Now you see it, now you don't. In that sense, it's temporary, but not false. So that the sufferings of the living entity, it's suffering. Once again, the essence of that suffering is forgetting Krishna. So then we've lost real happiness. But in that loss of real happiness, there's consequences. You know, then there's gradations of existence. Upper, middle, and lower. Consequences of separate interest. So, the not separate interest isn't become one. Again, Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas looks at Shankaracharya's ideas, and even amongst impersonalists, there's different schools, without going into it right now, but when I do that seminar, I will. He touches on different, there's this idea and there's that idea, and refutes them both. We experience this lesser consciousness, including, according to what our Vaishnava teachings say, this idea of becoming one with the Supreme, which is very popular. Not just, you know, some place in South India people talk like that. It's not just some place in India people talk like that. It's Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. There, people talk like that. They have that notion, whether it's explicit or implicit. Becoming one with the Supreme. Well, it's not the authority of Vyas, because he saw the living entities and saw the Supreme and saw the illusory energy and how the illusory energy was covering the living entities and how they can become influence. But it's not in the ultimate analysis he saw the living entities merging into the Supreme. He saw them becoming free from the illusory influence, and so that the part doesn't become the whole. It's notionally not rational, and it's not Vyasa's realization. So it's not what we're meant to become, where our interest is Brahman, and we become Brahman. But rather, our interest is the interest of Bhagavan, and that's what we're cultivating. And striving to become more and more and more transparent in that way. In devotion to Krishna. Okay, I think I'll end with that. See if there's any discussion, Subal.
Guru Maharaj, well, hearing this narration, I'm thinking, well, there's a lot of thoughts that comes, you know. One of them is a very severe punishment, and something that you think that is applicable to someone who is a very big-time criminal.
Yeah.
And then you have different gradations of people who have a combination of...
They're lesser criminals.
Sorry?
They're lesser criminals.
Yeah. So is that, you know, a general punishment for everybody who transgress, you know, religiosity? Or there's, I mean, you expect, you know... What happened to people who does piety as well as sinful, you know, things? Do they have to go through that horrible punishment?
Well, one thing, I don't have an answer for that beyond the following. And according to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Mahabhaya, the greatest fear, is to see the Yamadutas, because it means this. So, svapam apyasya dharmasya, even a little, will prevent one from that. So now back to your question. What if somebody indulges, but they do a little, so they won't undergo this? Now, who is there that doesn't undergo even a little? Well, there's some people, two-legged animals. That, and then Prabhupada says, well, in nectar devotion, in all societies, even in Aborigine societies, there's some idea of something. They worship an eagle, or, you know, the feather of an eagle, American Indians, or something, and some idea of worship, of regard for the Supreme. Misplaced, but the spirit of regard for the Supreme. But some other people are, you know, literally, there's a whole organization now, like I don't know exactly how to say it properly, but they have a church of atheism. They've formed not-for-profit, you know, using freedom of religion, First Amendment, to form the Church of Atheism. And they want to be able to, in public places, you know, put up monuments depicting the Church of Atheism, and then the Church of the Devil, and you're like, anyway, so it's like really crazy. Such people . Does that answer your question? The variable, certainly, you know, the crime, it's like what you're saying, first degree murder. It's premeditated, contemplated, go after the person, murder the person. Then there's something that's, you know, by accident something happened. But one was the cause of another person's death. Anyway, premeditated, second degree, third degree. So, degrees of crime and degrees of punishment according to the degrees of crime. Okay? Anything else?
Maharaj, I have a couple of questions. The first one, you mentioned that a living entity is subjected to eat his own flesh while subject to...
Living entity is subjected to what?
Eat his own flesh.
Yeah, that's what Kapiladev said. I'm just repeating.
I think you might have answered this while describing that it's an illusion kind of a thing.
Yes.
So I was just trying to understand if that...
Well, Prabhupada is comparing... During the Second World War, persons in concentration camps were starved. At least it is said that some persons ate their own stool. So he's equating that, the eating of their own stool, to eating of their own flesh. In other words, on the subtle plane, that's something that happens. But, excuse me, but in the subtle plane, there's no body. It's a subtle body. So what flesh are they eating? It's in the mind. So now we'll go back to this one. Well, here there is a body, and there may be, you know, waste product from the body. One eats that. So there's the physical, the gross physical event, but the gross physical event is connected to something subtle. They're not disconnected. So, you know, this is you know, bigger discussion or more involved discussion on... Are events in this realm absolutely false? No. It's illusory energy, and one is identifying with that illusory energy. But no, so now go to the platform of the soul. In either case, the eating of stool, one's own stool, eating of one's own flesh. As far as the soul is concerned, it's not reality. But in terms of events of this life, it appears to be reality. It's the illusory energy being displayed. That's how Vaishnavas Gaudiya Vaishnavas in particular view events of this world. So yes, just like in a dream, aside from, you know, the hell, in a dream, if something comes that's very fearful, what happens to the gross body? One may cry or whatever it is, lusty or fear or anger, you know, something. And, you know, the bodily transformations are influenced by what's going on subtly. So now again, the question, is it reality or is it absolutely false? Not absolutely false. As far as the soul is concerned, it's not who we really are. But it's something that we experience, that illusory energy, through the medium of false ego. We identify with those things. So back to the, you know, the in the subtle body being forced, being burned between two pieces of wood, and then forced to eat your own flesh and others. So it happens, and it happens in a matter of seconds.
Can I ask my second question?
Yeah.
You said preferably serve Krishna out of love, not out of fear. I was just wondering, until one comes to the stage of pure devotional service, my understanding is that that would not be possible, because right now where the stage where I am at, I tend to say to myself, okay, I need to follow this as a part of etiquette, and there is not pure love in that, but
it's the modes of nature. Until we reach the state of purity, modes of nature are impelling, or the influence of the modes of material nature is active, present, in degrees, of course. So in the mode of goodness, it's, I do this because it will purify me. The mode of ignorance is, I do this because I'm going to get spanked if I don't. And the mode of passion is, I'm going to get something if I do. Modes of nature. There may be, you know, three people doing the same behavior influenced by the modes of nature differently. What's behind? So the spirit behind it is different. And then the mood of that service is also going to be different. Until love comes. One, two, three. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Since my childhood, I had the one biggest fear of losing the family members.
Losing family members.
Yeah. So.
You know what's going to happen.
Yes, Maharaj. But that was the very my biggest fear that it has been carrying. And more of my death, I will be always worried about death of my family members. So at that time, how do I
overcome that fear?
Yes. Although I know that when I am reading Bhagavad Gita and hearing the lectures, I know that this body is not, this is temporary. And I also have the fear that they might leave the body without knowing about Krishna, because all of my family members and my friends or relatives, they don't know about Krishna much. And I also worry about that, they are not knowing about Krishna.
Well, just on that one, there's something that you can do about that. Become a pure devotee. Because if you become a pure devotee, they get spiritual benefit. Even if they don't do anything, you become a pure devotee, immediately spiritual benefit goes to them. what to speak of if you become a pure devotee. By association, they may also become a little inclined, or more than a little inclined. But even if they don't become at all inclined, they get spiritual benefit by you becoming a pure devotee. It goes to them. You don't even have to like offer prayers to them. It just happens. What to speak of goes offering prayers and so forth and so on. So fear, it's one of the six enemies. You know, lust is for somebody, and fear is for somebody, and anger is for somebody, and greed is for somebody else, and it's when it leads down. Adho gacchanti tamasa. Or in the later in Bhagavad Gita, it's one of the gateways to hell. So we don't want that. We just heard that what that's like. So for yourself, you know, what's the antidote? Not like fear of hell, so I want to give up this fear. That's kind of circular. It's knowledge. So knowledge and devotion. You turn on the light, darkness goes away. You've ever been in a dark place at night and you don't know where the light switch is? You ever had that experience?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
It's fearful. But when you turn the light on, you can see, and fear goes.
Okay, Maharaj. I have two more questions.
Okay.
I always wonder about Yamadharma Raj question, that every living entity thinks that he is going, others die, but I'm not going to die.
Yeah.
So they have that feeling. So even I have, so I'm having so much life, so I'll go slow, I'll take time, I have a lot of time. So I really want to get the seriousness that I don't know about my, how much time I have.
Right.
I want to take it this minute and today.
Very good.
Yes, but I don't know.
Not out of fear, but out of reality. We don't know if we're going to live 7 days. Maharaj Pariksit knew he was going to live for 7 days. We don't know we're going to live for 7 moments. So, you know, get serious. And then that's one of the things that happens when someone, either you have a near-death experience or someone close to you dies, and then, you know, the reality goes, wow, I don't know what I'm going to do. I should get it together. So, you know, when there's shock, then we're more attentive. But that's a lower state of consciousness than just simply, you know, understanding the reality is, just knowledge is also impetus for devotion. So it just goes step by step. It's not going to happen, you know, spread your wings and fly into the sky and then you're like transcendental. It's not going to happen like that. Step by step. Apply the process of devotional service, and then gradually a sustainable transcendental impetus will awaken. And it starts with just your practice and keep close association with devotees and advance little by little, incrementally in spiritual life. And it becomes, you know, your full-time absorption. Not out of fear that I want to, you know, I don't want to lose it, but I want to be with Krishna. Okay?
Okay. Last question is that every time demons, Krishna personally comes to kill them, and all other, even devotees, they all, they get Vishnu Dutas and all. So I was wondering that Krishna is giving them special privilege, the demon, that he himself is coming to take them.
Well, he sends the demons too.
He does. So I was wondering, like, he's actually blessing them more by coming himself. Like at the death, I'm seeing Krishna. But whereas my
what about you? You'll never see Krishna? Something like that? One
yes,
Maharaj.
So I don't know. I know I might get Yamadutas or Vishnudas. I don't know about that. But I see that the demons are more privileged than me, something like that.
Well, several things. One of them is Krishna makes himself available to you and to me through sound. One of the topics that Prabhupada spoke several times was some people say, oh, I'll never have the opportunity to hear from Krishna like Arjuna had. Arjuna heard from Krishna, but I'll never have the opportunity to hear from Krishna. So I guess I just have to resign myself to being dumb or unfortunate. And then, you know, no! Because when the representative of Krishna speaks the message of Bhagavad Gita, that is Krishna speaking. Not different. It's Krishna speaking. He's using the mouthpiece of someone, but it's Krishna speaking. So for you it's also, you can have, as with Krishna speaking the message of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, so now also the dangers and both Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained those pastimes of Krishna's killing the demons are for us in this world, not just the residents of Vrindavan. They're for us of this world. Because Krishna, just by reciting these pastimes, remembering these pastimes, there's potencies where the obstacles that we face that are of different categories, demon by demon, are obstacles that we face in this world. Krishna comes into our life and addresses and obliterates those obstacles. And how does he do that? Through sound vibration. So, last point, we don't have that realization. Well, if we were to see a demon, like Aristasura or Agasura or one of those demons, we wouldn't know what to do. We wouldn't be taking shelter of Krishna like the residents of Vrindavan. We'd just be scared. So, in other words, we wouldn't have the qualification to see Krishna even in those circumstances. So we're being given circumstances that matches, or given opportunity to match our circumstances. That's hearing. And it's not different. Krishna Katha and Krishna performing his pastimes, they're none different. So according to our qualification, we're being given the opportunity for Krishna to come and relieve us of our own contaminations, which are represented in the form of these different demons, our own contaminations. None different. We don't have the realization of that. Still the potencies are there. And as we continue to hear, we'll come to realize. When that wonderful day comes that you become Krishna's pure devotee, you'll realize what was just said. Just like what, you know, Prabhupada, when Krishna is speaking to Arjuna and the representative of Krishna is speaking Krishna's words, it's Krishna speaking in both cases. We don't have realization of that. But when we become pure devotees, we'll have realization of that. It's still acting, even we don't have realization. So you're being protected by Krishna directly. Yoga kshema vahamyaham. You know the verse in Bhagavad Gita? You can look it up. Look it up. Directly, Krishna is doing these things. It's not imagination. Directly, Krishna is doing these things. That's his mercy. It's his kindness. As independent as bhakti is, Krishna is independent. He's working through the agency. He's working. He's intervening directly. directly, personally, now. Not just in Goloka when demons come. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj. I feel that when I am in between the devotees, and I feel that I don't worry about my death. I'm fine here. I'm with the service. If I die, I'm fine.
Okay. Stay in the association of devotees.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Krishna Archana. We're just going to take this and one more question. We're going to end. It's 8 o'clock.
Sure, Swami. Sometimes one comes across an extremely ignorant person.
Sometimes someone comes across?
One can come across a person who's very much in the mode of ignorance, mm-hmm. and indeed actually breaking all the religious principles, and with full enthusiasm, and such a person speaks to oneself and I guess the question would be, to such a person, the stick part, would it be presenting, these are the direct punishments for these kind of activities, particularly the one connected to the, it was mentioned in the purport, indulgence in sex life one, because that's such a very engrossing one. A presentation of, these are the punishments for that kind of thing. Is that the stick method for a person in such extreme ignorance? Would it not require some kind of acceptance of the source from which it's coming, the statement of those punishments, for the person to even be able to respond to the stick? Because at least I've had the experience of such a person just bringing up the concept that one can have an alternative of serving God, producing fury, and actually even being told, I cannot respect you any longer if that's the case. So I'm wondering, even the presentation of the punishments as delineated here to such a person, would it not require the predisposition on the part of the person to somehow have some acceptance of the source from which the punishment is being spelt out?
In a higher sense, probably, but in a practical sense, not really. Meaning, just like take for example, there's a prison, and there's the person in charge of the prison, and there's people that assist the person in charge of the prison to prisoners here and there throughout the prison. I'm thinking specifically, I once was visiting a prison. I wasn't imprisoned. I was visiting someone who had written to, the temple and said, can you come and visit? So it was a high security prison, and I had to sit in a waiting room until, it was time for me to enter. And then I went through these series of things where, like three sets of gates were lifted. You go on the other side, and the three sets of gates come down. You go another 100 yards, three sets of gates go up. You walk through, three sets of gates come down. And then, I was taken to the minister, a Christian minister, that, somewhere was in the recesses of the prison. So what's behind those guys that were lifting the gates and this and that and the other thing is, the warden. But it's like, I didn't see the warden. I knew that there must be one, but it's like, behind the warden, there's the state, and behind the state, there's, lawmakers, and, so, I may not at all have an idea of what's behind all of this when, that the gentleman that was walking me through happened to be nice, but maybe there was somebody that was mean and, you know, treating me in an uncivilized way just because whatever his reason is. He got up on the wrong side of the bed that morning or didn't have the right thing for breakfast or doesn't like people that wearing Hare Krishna robes or, you know, whatever it is that may be influencing. So, you know, behind it ultimately is the Supreme Godhead. So one may learn the lesson, I shouldn't break the law. Because, you know, I certainly don't want to be in one of those situations. I'm not a law-breaking disposed kind of person, but anyway, it's not necessarily the person behind it all. The alternative is to be a free citizen, not so much be in harmony with, you know, the president or the governor of the state or something like that. It's more, especially when the modes of nature are really low, it's the guy with the stick in his hand. Who's only acting as on behalf of something higher, some higher authority. You know, like the Yamadutas, they're acting on behalf of Yamaraj. It's not necessarily, if I see fear of the Yamadutas, I may not be specifically thinking of Yamaraj, because he's a Mahajan. Anyway. If I'm going to see an alternative, then it's nice to know the, like Lord Nrisimhadev. The benevolent feature of Lord Nrisimhadev is meant for the devotees. So when he was showing his anger, Prahlad understood that those sharp claws and pinching teeth, that's for the non-devotees. I'm not afraid. The demigods were afraid. He was roaring and... Did that address your question? Okay. Something? Last question? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. When I hear the class and the description, it seems like Krishna has given us a perfect system and he's a really loving father, but somewhere it's not resonating completely inside. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding difficulty to take responsibility in some area of my previous action, and because it seems kind of unfair to me, because it seems I didn't have training or I didn't know better and I did this action which lead to unfairness, seems like unfair, and lead to, you know, anger and guilt.
Yeah.
So
accidental conduct is forgivable and deliberate misconduct is different. Like the example of Manduka Muni, who was going to be put on a changa, and then the king came and said, "Oh, it was a mistake. Please forgive me, the king, because the persons representing me were going to have you killed like others." So he forgave the king, then he went to Yamaraj and said, "Why was I subjected to this?" "Well, when you were little, you pierced ants with a straw, so you were going to be pierced by swords." And his reply was, "You're not fit, because in the innocence of childhood, one should not be punished for such things." So what's that innocence? In one sense, it's ignorance, not innocence. But it's something, then again, like the situation with Narada and Magari. He said, "Don't half kill them. Kill them completely." Why? "Because they suffer. I didn't even think of that." "Oh, and I'll be held responsible for their suffering? What should I do?" give up the activity of half killing them or even killing them. Just give it up. Oh. I mean, step by step. Then what will I do to maintain my family? Don't worry. I'll take care of that. Okay. So, the culpability was removed by association. So, supposing before association, one does what Gregari did, or something other that's untoward, you know, not within theistic conduct. This is what Lord Chaitanya said to Jagai and Madhai. First he said, Lord Chaitanya said to the devotees, never think of Jagai and Madhai in terms of their past activities. Never think like that. Big offense. They're Vaishnavas. Think of them as Vaishnavas. Don't make that mistake. It's very stern. Then he turned to Jagai and Madhai and said, you're completely forgiven. Just don't do this again. Like that. So there's justice in the universe. And especially they're persons of saintly character. They're invested with some grace, some power of attorney, like we were discussing, on Krishna's behalf, to relieve all of that. Just wipe it clean. And the process of chanting, the process of devotional service, is part of that. It's not just it goes to the person who gave the instruction. The bhakti itself it's gone. Not only the reaction, but even the potency is there for the whole thing to be just restored. And then, depending upon our capacity, someone may be stronger, someone may be, not every hunter is going to be like Magari. Oh, I'll break my bone. Okay. I don't need this anymore because I have you. So not everyone has that faith, capacity. But Magari did, and so he went the whole way. And someone may go a little more slowly. Now it's a little bit, it's dissimilar, but somewhat similar to this explanation of having fear. Fear of relatives being lost, fear that I may not be, complete, and I may have to, it's identification with matters produces that fear. And similarly, to the degree that we identify with the temporary, then these feelings that are, yucky feelings. We don't like those yucky feelings, but it springs from forgetfulness of self and identifying with the temporary. So the relief is, look at the temporary as it is. It's temporary, and it was there because of not having transcendental knowledge and a connection with Krishna. Had forgotten that. So let me restore the connection with Krishna and take care of those feelings of fear or the other ones and the other ones. The transcendental connection, turn on the light, and go to the light. And all of that will fade. Fear and other, those kinds of feelings, if have a hold, they pull us back. And we're accustomed to those feelings, and they have a pull on us because to a degree we identify with them instead of the spiritual conception. So then, therefore, association with others that help us awaken the spiritual conception of self and life, etc., life of devotion to Krishna, then all those other things, they're dissipated. Just like we heard, sadhana bhakti has that, the avidya and asmita and all those things, just within bhakti itself. So staying in the bhakti incubation chamber and all of that other stuff, just to the degree that our genuine devotion grows, those things just don't act on us anymore. Like, you know, being in a place of darkness. Very fearful. I remember a situation when I was growing up, a young boy. I had an older brother, and we shared a room together. He reminded me on a number of occasions that from the day I was brought home from the hospital, we shared a room together, and it's always been like that. So one time, we rearranged our room. We put, you know, this went over here, and that went over there, and that went over there. And it was disorienting. So when I, you know, woke up in the middle of the night needing to use the bathroom, it was pitch dark. And I didn't know where the light switch was. You know, and I would walk and, you know, bump into a bed or bump into a dresser or my nose would hit the wall or something, you know, because I didn't know where I was. And it was, you know, not knowing where you are is something you can live with, but I was a little boy, I got scared. Plus I hadn't used the bathroom. So I did what little boys do sometimes, I cried. And my parents' room were right next door. So they came in, just turned on the switch, and the fear was gone. So that's all, just turn on the switch. And we have people that are very kind and they know where the switch is. And they can help us. Then I got used to the configuration. I could, you know, find my way around even when it was dark. Once I knew where everything was. We're done. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki.